And up next, we are going to be speaking with Mark Calzavara, the regional organizer in Ontario and Quebec in the Council of Canadians, about the Melanchthon Quarry. And let's get him on the line here. Hello, Mark. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Great. Well, welcome to the show. We're also joined here by Alyssa, co-host.
Hello.
Yes. So, Mark, could you just give us a bit of a background in the history of the Melanchthon Quarry and how this vast amount of land was actually bought up by John Lowndes?
Well, the land was acquired by the Highland Companies. They're it's a company that's backed by or owned by, because it's private, we're not exactly sure by, how much, but by the Baupost Group. This is a multi-billion dollar American hedge fund out of Boston. So he, Mr. Lowndes, is from the area, apparently, and has been doing business in the area. But as the Highland Farms, they started acquiring the farmland in the area, according to the farmers there, they were told that they wanted to become the biggest potato farmers around. And it was about a year and a half ago, after they'd already acquired something like six to nine thousand acres, that word got around that these guys were actually acquiring the land to build a quarry, to dig a quarry. And that's when the community got up in arms, because it's such a huge area, and there's the deposits of limestone there that they would be taking out to build roads and buildings and all kinds of things like that. Aggregate, it goes down very deep. So this quarry, now that we've actually seen their application, they want to dig 200 feet down below the water table, and that's going to put the water table at risk, and it's the headwaters of five important river systems, the Grand River, the Nottawasaga, the Pine, and a few others, all start in the area right around where the quarry is. So anything that affects their headwaters is going to be have a really serious effect on the entire river systems.
So how does a permit change from aiming for potato farming and then into a limestone quarry?
Well, you don't have to tell people why you're buying the land, and there's no permit needed for the actual farming. And so the quarry license, that would be granted or refused by the Ministry of Natural Resources. They're the ones that administer the Aggregate Resources Act, the ARA, and this is a piece of legislation that is exceedingly friendly towards the quarries and towards the industry as a whole. One of the reasons may be that probably the largest customer of aggregate, largest buyer of aggregate, is the government itself, the Ministry of Transport. So that may be one way that, or one explanation as to why it's so loose. But the problem with the regulations being so agreeable to the industry is that for anybody who happens to live near a quarry, you suffer the consequences, and that can be blasting 24 hours a day. That's the plan here. I think they're going to be blasting something like 50 tons of explosive every day, and a portion of that is expected to not actually explode. It'll be left as a residue that can blow away on the wind onto neighboring farms, or it can get into the water table. Because they're digging, their plan is to dig so deep into the water table, they're going to have these massive pumps running essentially for eternity. If they ever turn them off, the hole would just fill with water and become a lake. So this corporation is promising to keep these pumps running for essentially forever, in order to keep the water from turning from filling the hole, essentially. So it means 600 million liters of water per day is going to have to be collected from the floor of the quarry and reinjected back into the aquifer. They're just going to try and, it's like vacuuming up the water before it can pool, essentially, and reinjecting it. And it's going to be full of every bit of residue that comes along, and whether that's, you know, leaky diesel trucks from the 3,000 dump trucks per day that will be in and out of the sites 24/7, or even from geese flying in. See, the area is prized farmland right now. It's full of honeywood silt loam, which is a special kind of soil that is found very rarely and nowhere else in such a huge quantity, and that's why it's so ideal for potato farming. And when to make this quarry, they're going to strip all the soil off and expose the rock, the limestone itself. And but that soil on top, the overburden is the technical term for it. That is the filter. So anything that happens there, whether it's geese bringing their, you know, their droppings or a diesel leak or anything else, that soil filters whatever is in it before it gets to the water table. You strip that away and the water has no filter. And so what ends up happening is any kind of contamination just goes right through and ends up in the aquifer and then feeds all those headwaters. And that's the main reason it's got to be stopped. Second reason is the community's dead set against it, and the community really should have the first and final say as to whether or not they should have such a massive scale project imposed on them. It's going to be the second biggest quarry in North America.
Wow. Could you just go a little bit further into the significance of a headwater in case people are unfamiliar with the term and why it's so important in this particular area that's called the Roof of Ontario?
Well, it's the Roof of Ontario. It's called that because it's the highest point in sort of the southwestern Ontario area, or one of the highest points. So all of the watersheds, it's the dividing line, and these five different rivers all sort of start in that area and flow off in different directions. And so there's, I've heard it said that up to 1 million people rely in some part on those rivers for their drinking water. So any contamination that's starting at the very top, it means the entire river is contaminated. I mean, the Credit River or the Don River, before they get to the city, they're significantly cleaner in Toronto. And if you're starting at the headwaters with a significant amount of pollution, then the entire river system is going to be polluted. But it's also the amount of water. We don't know exactly what's going to happen when, you know, if they go ahead with this plan and dig this massive amount of rock up, and how it might affect the different underground streams and water flows that exist there. To the credit of the Ministry of the Environment, they sent their own objections into the Ministry of Natural Resources, saying that they weren't happy with the information they had seen in the quarry proposal so far from the company, and they wanted more detailed information on what the company believes is happening underground. I really hope that they hold them to that and insist on getting actual information, not predicted information, not modeled information, which is the norm for the industry. Unfortunately, they can just take a guess at what they think is going to be there to get their approvals, and then once they have their approval and start digging, it doesn't matter whether they guessed right or not, they can keep going. That's the way the laws are written right now. And, you know, all across Ontario we've got communities battling to save their water and to protect their water sources. Just like in Melanchthon, we saw it at Site 41, and there's just sites all across the province because the government doesn't do enough to protect the water. They've cut back on all of the staffing for the various ministries that are charged with enforcing the rules, and they're also simplifying the rules. They call it cutting red tape, but in reality what it's doing is cutting regulation and taking away protection and taking away the options that communities have to fight or to even find out about a project before it's too late.
Speaking of approval or refusal, I know that avaz.org was hosting a petition against this Stop the Quarry. And the petition was called Poisoning Canada's Water, addressing it to the Minister of Natural Resources, Linda Jeffrey. Have you spoken to anyone in the communities? Have you heard any really profound community opinions about this?
About the survey itself, or the petition, rather?
The Melanchthon Quarry.
Oh, about the quarry.
Yeah,
the community is dead set against it. They formed a couple of years ago now. They formed their own group called the North Dufferin Agricultural and Community Task Force, or NDACT. And you can find that at NDACT.com, where there's some good information there about the issue. But the farmers are against it. The weekenders who have bought homes in the area, many of them coming from Toronto, they're against it. And it's, the more people find out about it, and it's, they haven't really advertised all that much to let people know about it, but the more people find out about it, the more unhappy they are when they find out what sort of impact it's going to have. Now, today we delivered the Avaz petition to Linda Jeffrey's office in Brampton, accompanied by a representative from NDACT and some Guelph chapter Council of Canadians folks, and that petition got up. It's now, I think, over 110,000 signatures, and I think it went online on Thursday afternoon last week. I've never seen a petition in Canada grow so quickly. I think it's probably the biggest petition that the McGuinty government has seen in all its years in power. It's certainly got to be the biggest one that the Ministry of Natural Resources has ever seen. So I think that they're really starting to figure out that this is an issue that people are very upset about and are not going to just sit idly by. I think the government, the pressure is on them to listen to the people, the community itself, and to their supporters across the province who are just fed up with the lack of protection for water systems and the anything goes for business attitude that we get from the provincial government.
So the Highland companies, they currently own this lot of area, right?
Yeah, I think they have about 9,000 acres now, and all of it could potentially become quarry. This is just 2,300 or 2,400 acres that they've applied for, but the idea being that if they get approval here, they would just add on to this over time. That's what people expect until they get to their 9,000.
So what do you think would happen if they if their application was rejected? What do you think would happen with the land that's, I guess, currently owned by them now?
I assume that they would continue potato farming. And most likely they would wait for maybe a change in government or some other changes that would allow them to reapply for a different kind of quarry license. They might apply for a smaller one. I mean, the amount of money that they stand to make here is literally in the billions of dollars. So the investment that they've made so far, while it's significant, it's something like $100 million or so, roughly. That's the estimate people have been using. The profit is going to be so high that they probably could get away with scaling it back significantly and still have a profitable operation. Unfortunately, it would still be a threat to the groundwater and to those river systems, even as a smaller quarry. So, but the community itself is gonna have a lot to say about whether they accept a smaller quarry or not. I kind of think that they wouldn't.
There already are quarries in the area, but nothing near this scale. Is it the issue of scale that is such a problem?
Yeah, it's a question of scale, and it's also a question of the kind of quarry. Most of the what we call quarries up there are actually more like gravel pits. They're pulling up or digging out eskers and moraines, and it's deposits of rock. They're not as much. I'm not aware of any other quarries, but I'm not a quarry expert there. not aware of any others that would be digging or that have dug so deep into the actual rock itself, like down 200 feet below the water table. So it's a question of scale and location and the kind of project.
Right. And just to wrap up, I have a question about the actual land selling. And just hearing you term the overburden, I mean, it's so strange to think of topsoil as overburden in this kind of industry. And there are claims from the Highland Company that after everything is all said and done, we're going to restore the land so that it could be, you know, used for growing again. Like, what is the validity of that kind of claim?
I don't believe it. I don't think anybody in the community believes it either. But I saw a figure the other day that just to run the pumps to keep the bottom of the quarry dry enough for farming to happen, once all the rock is gone, it would cost so much more than they could possibly hope to make from farming it. So, and the idea that they would do that in perpetuity, I mean, when was the last time we saw a corporation, any corporation anywhere, behave in that sort of responsible manner? It boggles the mind. It's so unbelievable that it's laughable, and I can't see how anyone could write that on paper and put their name to it myself.
Mm-hmm.
So
go ahead, sorry.
So the farming aspect of it, like once, like that Honeywood silt loam, once you strip it off and pile it up in berms around the property, essentially you kill that soil. Like the soil is almost an organism in and of itself. It has these, you know, this balance of microorganisms and nutrients and humidity in it, and it's meant to be laying out in the sun the way it is, with plants growing through it. And if you pile it up, it gets compacted and the microorganisms die off, and it's never the same. You can't just then spread it out and hope that you're going to have a fertile land base again. It doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm. And I guess an underlying question that I had was how this much land could be acquired, and what that says about the state of farmers and their finances right now in Ontario, that this much land could be sold.
Well, farming is cyclical. I mean, so they have good years, they have bad years. I think for food farming, crop farming, it's been for quite a while now, they've been having a harder time in Ontario, and partly that's because of larger market shifts and the idea that we're competing with food being shipped in from all over the world instead of buying locally, like, and supporting our local farmers and our local economy like we should do. The more trade deals we sign, the less we're allowed to do that as a policy. The city of Toronto right now they're looking at getting rid of their buy local policy around food issues. And if the economic deal is signed, the free trade deal is signed with Europe, the CETA, the Comprehensive Economic Trade Agreement with Europe, then probably they won't even be allowed to have that policy, even if they wanted to have it, because the Europeans would insist that they're allowed to bid on any contract. So it gets a little bit complicated when you get into that level of economics, but it's part of the reason why farming is not a super lucrative career right now. Now, the farmers in that area are doing all right. They've got a lot of their potatoes are going to some of the, well, I guess we get in Toronto, I think 60% of our potatoes that we eat in Toronto are coming from the Melanchthon area.
Mm.
So, but the company came in and they paid a premium for the land. They paid more than any farmer was willing to pay for it, because they had ulterior motives. And
right.
I guess people didn't figure it out until it was a little bit too late.
Hmm. Well, do you have any advice for people who want to get involved in this? Like, what is the top thing that someone could do if they wanted to help out?
Well, the best thing you could do right now is send a message through the Environmental Bill of Rights. Depending on who you talk to, the deadline was or is today, whether that was midnight or today at the moment. Either way, I think that if you were to send a message through to the EBR, and you can do that through the Council of Canadians website. If you go to canadians.org, there's an action alert right on our website, right on the landing page there. You can send a message through the Environmental Bill of Rights. That is a message that the minister would supposedly take into account when she's making her decision. Now, I think we've had probably over 1,500 people do that already. We've had another 100,000 plus people sign a petition that was also submitted through the Environmental Bill of Rights registry. So every other voice that we can add to it will help. You can still sign the petition on Avaaz. We've presented it, but we will update it, or Avaaz will keep the minister updated on how many people are signing it. Mm-hmm. So that's avaaz.org. The Facebook group is Stop the Mega Quarry. I think it's also Stop the Quarry, but joining that and keeping up to date, there's going to be lots of events happening in the future. And the Council of Canadians, you know, we're going to be helping as much as we can with the quarry. There's a chapter at York University for the Council of Canadians. You can join the chapter and take part in activities throughout the year upcoming. The decision can be made at any point, anytime soon, but we don't expect that it's going to be made until at least after the provincial election in October.
That was Mark Calzavera from the Council of Canadians. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, and keep doing what you're doing. It needs to happen. All right. Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.